If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
You're listening to Chief Concerns.
Hear ye, hear ye. My fellow brethren and sistren of the Chief's Clan.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Please, just like... be cool for once. Thank ye.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Pew, 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 pew.
Who says we can't give you three sports in 30 minutes? No one. Because we can. We successfully did. Welcome to the Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Following Royals, which was following Sporting, which was following a Sporting game. Oh, Jed is here, by the way. Hi, Jed. Welcome to Chief Concerns.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be a part of it.
We make laser noises with our mouths. Pew, 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 pew. Oh, it's like you've been here the whole time. Jed pointed out, we following NASCAR, we had NASCAR talk in BTL before this. This has been like the most diverse few hours in sports radio 810 history. I'm declaring it with absolutely no proof that that's true. But no more diversity in sports topics-wise. Just Chiefs for the next hour or so. And I know we're having a really fun off-season. And I was reminded of this literally like 20 minutes ago. I was doing an interview with a Los Angeles Rams podcast, which, first of all, was just wonderful because I got to talk about Marcus Peters again. And no one told me to shut up and get over it. I got to tell him how good Marcus Peters is. And he got to tell me how Sammy Watkins might have, like, kind of quit on a few plays last year. But the thing that reminded me of how good this offseason has been is the fact that I was talking to the show. I was talking about how stacked the offense is now around Patrick Mahomes. And I went through it, like, twice. And then I remembered I had completely forgotten about Travis Kelce. Like, probably the most overwhelming weapon on this offense. I just didn't mention him, and, like, everything I was saying still worked. It's like, yeah, I mean, they have so many weapons around Patrick Mahomes right now. You got Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, Kareem Hunt behind him, super deep backfield. Like, he is ready to go. He is surrounded by weapons, and this season's about Pat Mahomes. And then it's like, oh, yeah, also Travis Kelce. He's really important. But, like, at this point, it's embarrassing to even bother pointing out all of the different things that this offense has. It's such a bizarre feeling to be a Chiefs fan and be like embarrassed by the riches around you. Like, I've never felt these feelings before. I've spent most of today talking about, like, ooh, are we overhyping Patrick Mahomes? We'll talk to Matt Verderam, a fan sided about that here in a minute. Like, are we overhyping Patrick Mahomes? Going into me overhyping Patrick Mahomes. And to also say, you know what? Actually, no, I'm not worried. Let's just do it. Let's just tell everybody how great this is going to be. And that's the theme of this offseason, and it's amazing. I'm having a great time. And I hope you are as well. The story of the week for the Chiefs, which is, this is a very May 9th story. The Chiefs cut one of their rotational defensive linemen. Like, that might not have gotten a notification to pop up on your phone with a breaking news banner. But it was a really interesting move that the Chiefs made. I think we can learn some things from it. The Chiefs cut Raheem Munoz-Rochez after signing him to a one-year, $1.9 million deal back on April 27th. Now, that was his restricted free agent tender. It's not like they went out and pried him away from some other team. And also, by cutting him from that contract, it costs no dead money. There's no dead cap space they're carrying this year for Munoz-Rochez. So right at the front end, you go, well, that's a cap move, right? And I think it is. I think that's pretty much cut and dry. The main motivation of this is to save a couple million dollars. Trez Paylor reported as much pretty quickly after the move was made, saying, I'm hearing it's a cap move. And that makes sense. Because days after signing Munoz-Rochez to this $2 million deal, they drafted Derek Nnadi. So this makes sense as far as the bodies they have in camp and everything. But the timing of it is kind of curious. My best bet is that the Chiefs had this in mind all along. They ended up trading up for Derek Nnadi, so it's not like they were caught off guard by him falling to them in the third round or whatever. They went up to get him. And my best guess is that they went into the draft with Nunez Roches as their, what if we don't find somebody better kind of insurance. And even if Derek Nnadi isn't better, he is definitely cheaper, and he is younger, and he has more years now of team control than Nunez Roches had with his just 1 year. Also this offseason, the Chiefs got Xavier Williams. It's $1.6 million this year and $3.4 million next year, though the second year could be dropped for less than $1 million dead cap hit, so that's something to keep an eye on. All that according to Over the Cap, a tremendous resource for keeping all of your Chiefs moves in mind. So the Chiefs now, with Nnadi and Xavier Williams, they've invested in their interior defensive line pretty heavily. And even though Nunez Roches has a little flexibility as far as exactly where he plays, they decided he wasn't worth $2 million as a down-the-line rotational player, experience notwithstanding. And I think that makes sense. Like, that is all fine. Now, this does give the Chiefs an extremely young defensive line and an experienced defensive line, especially in the middle. But Alan Bailey and Chris Jones on the edges are two definite starters, definite contributors who have been in this defense. And Chris Jones is a guy that you expect to continue to grow. Alan Bailey has been really good whenever he's healthy. I think he's probably, maybe the most underappreciated guy on this defense. So I think the Chiefs are right to not worry too much about a $2 million defensive lineman rotation piece. But it does pose an interesting question as to what they plan to do with those $2 million. There are a couple of guys still on the market at corner who have injury concerns, and maybe if you wait a little while and be prepared to have them in, meet with your doctors and everything a little farther down the line, maybe you look there, and I would be pretty surprised if the Chiefs did that. Eric Reed and Trey Boston are still out there, but the Chiefs drafted Dorian O'Daniel and Armani Watts. So the safety position, I think, is, I can't say it's ready to go, but it seems like that's probably something that they're relatively happy with at this point. They could roll those $2 million over into next season, have a little more flexibility then. But the Chiefs could also be doing that in more places. And how much do you almost literally mortgage this season for the benefit of next year? That's another thing that the pieces aren't all together on right now. They could definitely be using this space during and after training camp. Guys get cut, you want to make sure you have the flexibility to bring somebody in. Maybe there's a cap casualty somewhere, and you want to make sure you have the flexibility to go grab a guy that you didn't think was going to end up on the market. Maybe it's simply for depth, and whatever you don't need to spend it on, you can roll it over in the next season. But I think that's the thing here that's most interesting is it's a cap move with some sound logic. They've invested in this defense, across this defensive line, especially when you start considering what the Chiefs can do in sub-packages and everything. But what's the $2 million for? Do you cut $2 million just because? Maybe, and you could. That's not an indictment on the move if there's not a specific plan in place. It's a logical place to cut a little bit of fat off the edges. But still interesting. Now, whenever I was talking about this the first few times around over on ESPN Kansas City, both on the Facebook page and the actual radio show and all that, people were asking about the defensive line depth, saying, are you concerned about the depth of the position now? And I'm really not. I would have been a few years ago. I would have been at a time when I wasn't as comfortable with the way the NFL defenses tend to work now. But with what the Chiefs are doing and with what Bob Sutton is doing, this team is going to have a ton of sub packages. That's what the draft was mostly for. Dorian O'Daniel is a tremendously interesting player and athlete, but his role is carved out to be that linebacker safety hybrid who can stop the run as a safety and a nickel defense when you got five defensive backs out there. Armani Watts could be a over-the-top center fielder type safety in most situations. Derek Nani is a guy that rotates through in first and second down, but he's not going to be on the field in third down situations. Breland Speaks this year is probably a sub-package guy. You bring him in when you want to get a little bit faster across the defensive line or in the pass rush, try to get a little more pressure, maybe even bringing him in for a guy like Derek Nani or Xavier Williams. And say, we're not going to bother having the beef in the middle. We're going to give us some more opportunity to get to the quarterback in third down situations. The draft was all about that. The draft was about filling those holes so you have instances in which you can solve any problem that an offense is going to give you. You don't have to do all of that with your base defense. And that's something that's, again, kind of new to the NFL. It's at least new to conventional wisdom. It's new to common knowledge. And so as the Chiefs continue to embrace that and to not be forced in situations that we saw last year, where Daniel Sorensen has to be your hybrid guy in nickel packages and he cannot be a run stopper, whenever you have the personnel to execute all of that as well as you can, you don't have to worry so much about depth at the more conventional positions. And that's what the Chiefs have solved. All right, we're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to hear from Matt Verderam of FanSided. I got a chance to talk to him a little bit earlier today over on ESPN Kansas City. He wrote a piece about Patrick Mahomes, and if the Chiefs and Chiefs fans are overhyping him, I think our conversation takes an incredibly interesting couple of paths here. We'll talk about that next.
Chief Concerns. Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome back to Chief Concerns here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe giving you your Wednesday evening dosage of Kansas City Chiefs talk as we have done now for, I don't know, like three Wednesdays in a row. Is this three? Four? I think this is number four. Look at us. You have a whole streak going. The conversation that we're having now is about Patrick Mahomes, as many of our conversations this year are going to be, rightfully so. But today, Matt Verderam of FanSided sent out a tweet and also a full-on article that you can read on FanSided about Patrick Mahomes and about the way that he is being projected and hyped by not only Chiefs fans, but also the Chiefs themselves as an organization. And I thought that was interesting. So I talked to him earlier today over on ESPN Kansas City on my show, Almost Entirely Sports, from 4 to 6. Everybody drink. I talked to Matt for a while, starting off and really sticking with for a while the conversation around Patrick Mahomes. I asked, is it possible for Chiefs fans to overhype Patrick Mahomes at this point? I think almost literally a superhero.
Listen, I did write about Patrick Mahomes today on FanSided. I just said, look, you know, the Chiefs are going to go as he goes. I don't think that's anything that anybody doesn't know. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's an idea among some Chiefs fans that he's going to just walk on water mm-hmm. the second he steps on the center. And look, if you look at the history of players in their first year at that position, yes, there are some very successful players. However, there are some Hall of Famers who played very inconsistently at best in their first season. And I think that we're almost setting him up to fail with this mm-hmm. massive amount of expectation on him. And if he loses a game, if he throws a pick, it's going to be almost treated apocalyptically. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's a very interesting narrative for a 22-year-old kid.
Yeah, I think you're right on a lot of pieces there. Like, I think that the levels of hype and the idea that if he throws a pick that everyone melts down, that is an unfair expectation. One specific part of it, though, that I think is interesting, you say quarterback in his first year, and he's obviously in his first year as the starting quarterback,
right.
But one place where I think the expectations change for him is because he did sit behind Alex Smith last year, and we were told implicitly and explicitly by the Chiefs that was going to be something that really gives him a jump start into his first year as a starter. So I think that's one place where the expectation raises a little bit fairly,
Because if it was always going to be rough, he should have started last year.
I think there's truth in that. Look, you know, he did sit behind Alex Smith, obviously, and Smith had a very good year. He had the best year he had when he was in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Mahomes, look, he got the benefit of learning the playbook, which can't be understated.
Sure.
He should, at this point, have a pretty good grasp of it. Now, a lot of people say it takes 3 years to fully understand the West Coast system, and maybe rightfully so, but he should have a pretty good understanding of all the concepts, the different route combinations, stuff like that. Now, that being said, he has not played in a meaningful football game, really, unless you want to include that Denver game, in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he's going to come in here, and teams are going to be trying to throw stuff at him that he's never seen. That doesn't mean he can't be really good. He might very well be an excellent player right off the jump. But I think there's this mentality in Kansas City, at least among some, that he's going to come in and just be otherworldly right away. And that is a dangerous way to look at something when really history says, even if he's really good, he's going to have some great games. He's going to have some games where you say, what happened? What did he do there? And that's okay.
And I think the thing that makes this so interesting, we actually were talking about this a couple days ago, even before your article came out. The thing that I think makes this so interesting and also makes the conversation all valid is because this is the first time maybe ever in the history of the franchise, but certainly the first time in a long time, the Chiefs had a quarterback that could set their ceiling and floor. Like, realistically, we always knew where Alex Smith was going to fit into. There was a standard deviation, especially from Alex Smith. There was an expectation and then a standard deviation in both directions where we knew he could hit either of those things. But ultimately, we discussed this team last year and in the years prior. We discussed what do the pieces of this team give you. How good can the defense be? How big of a loss is it to not have player X or Y? Because we talked about this team's Super Bowl ceiling being reached only by the team being almost perfect because Alex Smith was going to just be Alex Smith. With Patrick Mahomes, the point where I realized this a couple days ago, with Patrick Mahomes, maybe I don't need to worry quite so much about the Chiefs' number two cornerback spot being a weakness. Because if Mahomes is really good, we don't have to worry about it. Because he erases those he could erase those negatives, because Aaron Rodgers does that every year. On the other hand, if he's Blake Bortles, then this whole team, you know, then every negative piece of this team is exposed tenfold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think there's a few things at play with Mahomes. One is, I do agree with you, if he comes in and he's really good, none of the rest of this nonsense matters.
Right.
None of it. It doesn't matter if Eric Fisher's average and he's not really good.
Doesn't matter.
And it doesn't matter if Steven Nelson is good but not great.
Mm-hmm.
And Dee Ford doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
They could stick Dee Ford in the 10th row of the stadium.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter. Because if he's really good, they will win 12 or 13 games.
Yep.
Especially with the offense that's around him.
Yep.
That offense is ludicrously talented. So, now, on the flip side of that, I would wager that no player has ever been under more pressure in Kansas City sports than Patrick Mahomes, ever. Because of a multitude of factors. One that you brought up, Alex Smith, there was always a mindset, and I think rightfully so, that you needed to play perfect around him. He kind of kept you as a good team, but he never allowed you to truly be a great team on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
And Chiefs fans have not had a franchise quarterback in forever.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, here comes this kid that the Chiefs traded up for, traded a lot to get. He looks the part. He acts the part. He sounds the part. You get a little taste of him last year at Denver. He was phenomenal in the game. And I think there's this mentality of, oh, my God, this guy is the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is it. And coming off the heels of Smith, it almost is a perfect storm of, well, he's what's going to put us over the top. And he may.
Right.
But, you know, they're going to go into week one against the Chargers on the road. And I think if he doesn't throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns in that game, there's going to be parts of Kansas City that say, well, what happened? What went wrong? Even if he plays okay, but he doesn't put up mind-blowing stats.
And I do think that having this conversation in May is worthwhile, because If that's the response, then there's a problem in the expectations. Whenever the schedule came out, people were like, oh, man, those first 4 weeks, and really the first 6 weeks are brutal. And they are. There's 6 weeks against really difficult teams. But people were saying, you know, we can tell in these first 6 weeks, we'll know if the Chiefs are contenders or not. And we aren't going to have a freaking clue, Matt, because whatever the Chiefs are in week six, if they're 1-5 in week six, but they end the season at 9-7 and squeak in, and by week 16 and 17, Patrick Mahomes looks like Aaron Rodgers, then whatever happened those first 6 weeks doesn't matter, like literally at all. So I hope that fans keep that in perspective, where in reality, what we're looking at is the Chiefs staying in contention and keeping an eye on how Mahomes progresses. Because I think the expectation that's fair is that Mahomes does progress throughout the season.
Correct. And look, all you have to do is look at this past season. The Chiefs were 5-0 and looked like the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl, and then finished the season by losing to the Titans.
Yep.
Okay, at home. That being said, look, I will say this, and I think even though this is a little bit unfair in some ways, it's just it's reality. You look at those first two games. They're on the road against the Chargers, and they are on the road against Pittsburgh before they come home for their home opener against the Niners. The Chiefs, with Alex Smith, could never beat Pittsburgh, ever.
Right.
If Mahomes goes into that game, if they can beat the Chargers, which they've done 8 straight times now, if they can win that game, if they go into Pittsburgh and Mahomes lights them up and wins that game, it is going to be insane.
Yes.
The hype coming back home to Arrowhead for week 3 is going to be absolutely awesome. And you know what, at that point, look, you know what, have some fun with it. Deservedly
sure.
So, but it'll be... If they beat the Chargers, I think there'll be some excitement. And, oh, hey, he looked good. If they go into Heinz Field and beat Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and it's because of him, it will be absolutely obscene coming back to play San Francisco.
And at that point, like that's at least that's slight. Like it's more earned, I think. Like that wouldn't bother me. I don't
sure.
think I'd be out here telling anybody to pump the brakes if that happens. For me, the thing that I'm with you that I don't want to be suffering in week 3 if they're 0-2 going into week 3 against the Niners, that it's not same old yet. We're not anywhere near that level of starting to figure out your next plan. I don't think most people are going to get to that point, but I do think it's fair to wonder if the current expectations are appropriately couched. Another thing on that I wonder, is it fair to say that Alex Smith really never had pressure? Like, this year, I guess he had some because Mahomes was there. But at the very least, he never had pressure to exceed expectations or even pressure to be great. Mahomes has that because of where he was drafted, basically.
Yeah, I think there were never expectations on Smith like there are on Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
Mahomes is expected to come in and be the reason that they win. He
right.
is expected to throw eventually, if not this year, for 4,500 yards
mm-hmm.
and 38 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever expected that out of Smith. I think there was pressure on him this year, like you said, because Mahomes, and you knew that if he didn't play incredibly and if they didn't perform, that he'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it would have been anyway. But, you know, I don't think – no, I think the pressure was always on Andy Reid more than anybody else. Like, hey, you've got to scheme
yeah.
this up. You've got to figure this out. And now I think the pressure is like, hey, look, with Patrick Mahomes, you need to be the reason we're winning.
Mm-hmm.
And look, you look at the way they constructed this team, the Chiefs are saying that.
Yes.
I mean, make no mistake. When you go out and spend $48 million on Sammy Watkins and you don't spend a ton of money on your defense and frankly could have used it,
mm-hmm.
You are saying we expect you to go out here and be the driving force in these games. When Brett Veach comes out and says, he's one of the best players I've ever seen.
Yep.
That is a mouthful.
It is.
The Chiefs, I'll say one thing about this, and maybe this should make Chiefs fans feel good. The Chiefs themselves have done nothing to slow the hype train down on
yep.
this. Zero. And a lot of times you'll see franchises, I'm based in Chicago, I've seen the Bears try to get in front of it with Trubisky over and over and over, and I think maybe because they know he's got to develop a little bit more. The Chiefs have done none of that with Mahomes,
mm-hmm.
both internally, externally, you name it. So they clearly feel like, hey, we've got this kid. We're going to roll with him immediately. And that's a good sign. But, boy, it sets up what could be either a very disappointing year in Kansas City or a year where they are 2-0 and people are running around naked in the street.
That is what I'll be doing. I might attend the 49ers game in the nude. Now that you've given me that wonderful idea.
They will not let you in, hopefully.
Okay, I may tailgate for that game in the nude. It's going to be a lot harder to pinpoint me, I think, at that point. But okay,
Well, you might be one of many people at that point.
That's true. I'll blend in. There'll be a nudist colony in Arrowhead's parking lot.
I really like the one thing that is funny with them, and you know, it's just the way things fall. But if you look at that schedule, you know, they've got all these prime time games this year, but only one of them's at Arrowhead, and it's late in the year. And you look at it, and they got week two Pittsburgh. They play Jacksonville, who's, you know, not a great team, but a good team, and certainly a great defense, week five. And then the next week they go play New England at Foxborough. That stretch could either be very hard on them, and it could really temper expectations, or they could come out, and nobody has film of them yet with all these new players. And Mahomes is great, and by the time they go to Foxborough, people are just completely out of their minds. And you know what? I think in some ways, even though – you know, you always knew with Smith that they were going to be a good team. There wasn't any thought, really, of, oh, well, they're going to go 7-9. I mean, most people expected them to at least get to the playoffs. This year, you don't have that safety net. You don't know what they're going to do. But on the flip side, I think there's a weird little bit of excitement because they also could just be incredibly entertaining and high scoring. So it's a very weird year. I can't remember a year with the Chiefs where I could see them going 6-10 realistically, and I could see them winning 13 games. And nothing in between would surprise me.
And that's the Mahomes factor. That's why this exists like this, and it's great.
It is.
The point you bring out about the front end of the schedule, I hadn't thought about phrasing it this way until now, but I think it's almost like this definitely could be cut and then taken out of context in a few months and turned against me. But I think it's kind of win-win because if they go out and they have a rough six-game stretch against like three very good teams, a division rival on the road, two division rivals on the road, and the Niners, who could be anything. Like if they come out of that stretch 1-5 or 2-4, then expectations get recalibrated, and then they have a much easier 2/3 of their schedule coming right up when they have a chance to actually get into a real you know, stride going into the playoffs, or at least a playoff contention. And if they burn through those first 6 weeks and win 4 or 5 games, then like you said, all hell breaks loose. I think with a proper mindset, it borders on a really nice way to start the season.
If the Chiefs win 4 or more of those games to start the year,
yes,
that is going to be an outrageous fall well into the winter. Because
yes,
if you look at that schedule, and look, you know what? It's a fool's errand to sit there and look at all these games right now because, you know, we looked at the schedule last year and said, geez, that game against the Giants is going to be tough.
Yeah.
And of course, they ended up losing it.
Right. But, that's right. Good point. Know, yes.
But the game was a joke. By the time they played them, the Giants were awful.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes the schedule isn't full. But as you look at it now, you would say if they can just survive those first 6 games, if they go 3-3.
Oh, yes. Yes.
They are so set up the last 10 games, you know, 8-2 or, you know, whatever the hell it is. They're talented enough to do it. Plus, the nice thing for the Chiefs, you would assume Mahomes gets better as the year goes on.
Yep.
And the last three of the four games are at home. And those games, two of them are against the Chargers and the Raiders. The Chargers on a short week. The Raiders, who never play well there with Carr. And Carr has been hideous in cold weather, and they get him week 17 at Arrowhead. And they get the Chargers, who are a warm weather team, week 15 on a short week at Arrowhead. And so things really shook out well for the Chiefs. I mean, really, it's all about surviving those early weeks. But if they can survive them, and Mahomes gets better and better as that year goes on, that defense starts to gel, I always feel like you're better playing good teams early because bad teams will quit late. They'll rest guys were hurt, they don't care, they're already one foot out the door. And good teams, as the year gets going, they get better, and they're more desperate to win because there's playoff implications. So I actually think it shapes up well for the Chiefs. But look, again, to bring it full circle, this all comes down to Mahomes.
Yep.
Their defense could be 20th in the league, and if he's great, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
It really doesn't. It'll matter maybe in the playoffs, but it won't matter in regular season. And we saw that. We've seen it with Green Bay. We saw it the one year where Derek Carr was an MVP candidate, which, you know, say what you want. They went 12-4. Their defense, they couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
The Pats for years have had years of that roster has been mediocre at best. They went 14 games because they have Brady. So, You know, Chief fans, it's not something you're used to as a Chief fan. You don't normally win because you're a quarterback. You win in spite of them, or at least, you know, maybe just because of the rest of the team equally so. But this year, if he's really good with the weapons that surround him, they could win games, and that defense could just be asked to make three stops, and that's enough. Yeah. And it's going to be a very different team that we see this year.
Earlier you mentioned that that the pressure with Alex Smith was really on Andy Reid, and I think you're right, but I also think that's a really interesting way of thinking about it, because we have had Patrick Mahomes to talk about, and even the defense, and Bob Sutton to talk about. We haven't talked much about Andy Reid because he's not the guy really in the spotlight right now, but I think eventually he will be, and he needs to be. Is that because we just have other shinier distractions, or is it because we just sort of believe that Andy Reid is going to handle this correctly? And then what do you expect from Reid?
I think there's an expectation. And Reid's a really good head coach. He's got his warts. He makes mistakes. But Andy Reid is one of the three best coaches in the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, all he does is win. And a lot of years he's done it with underperforming or under talented rosters in Philly and in Kansas City, although certainly – one could argue that his shortcomings have cost him the playoffs. That being said, I think, you know, Reid made a statement, and I can't remember for the life of me, it was after the Denver game or during the offseason, way after the game, but he made a comment to the effect of, every time we had the ball against Denver, I felt like we were going to score.
Mm.
And that's a pretty remarkable statement considering they had all their backups in against the starting Denver defense, and he felt like they were going to score every time they had the ball.
Yeah.
And if he felt like that against them on the road, 15-degree weather, with Mahomes and a bunch of guys who normally don't play, well, then I would imagine he would feel that way with Mahomes and all these other guys around him.
Yeah.
So I think for Reid, in a lot of ways, the pressure is off. Look, you know, everybody talks about, well, if Mahomes can't succeed with this group, then that's a pretty bad omen, which I would agree with. But I don't say the same thing for Reid. I mean, has he ever had more talent at his disposal offensively?
I don't think so.
It's incredible. Nobody even talks about Kareem Hunt, the guy who led the league in rushing for rookie last year. People forget that he exists because everybody's so busy talking about Hill and Watkins and Kelsey. And then you have Kareem Hunt. You have other guys. You know, Spencer Ware's coming back. They've got a litany of other weapons. You know, Chris Connolly's coming back. I mean, Andy Reid really, look, you know, there have been times where Reid's gotten criticized because his offense, in the period of the game, will go from incredible to a complete lull for a quarter and a half. They don't show up. There is no excuse for that this year. If this offense can't score very consistently, then either Mahomes is struggling somewhat or Andy Reid's got an issue with his play calling. Because this team, I mean, you could make a real argument, skill position-wise, they are the best team in the NFL.
Yeah. It's like them or Pittsburgh, probably, yeah.
Yeah, and as great as Pittsburgh is, skill positional, they don't have the tight end, the Chiefs.
Nope, definitely not.
I mean, so to me, you know, if not, and I agree, Pittsburgh would be the one other one, but the Chiefs are right there.
Mm-hmm.
So Andy Reid, you're not trying to scheme up DeAnthony Thomas.
Right.
Chris Connolly's not, and I like Chris Connolly, but he's not your number two receiver now. You don't have Tre'Kendrick West and Spencer Ware as your number one tandem. Like, you have the leading rusher in the NFL. You have the biggest big play threat in the league. You have the best tight end in football right now, and you've got another premier deep threat, Sammy Watkins. So you can't scheme up 30-some-odd points with that team on a consistent basis. You're never going to do it.
And I was just thinking about, you know, you asked if this is the most talented team that Andy Reid's ever had. I think the second most talented team he's ever had, he took to the Super Bowl.
I would agree, yeah, because that was your Owens, even though he broke his leg, you know, when he was there, they were very prolific, and McNabb was in the prime of his career. And, you know, look, and I think, again, you know, we talk a lot about defensively where the team is, and who the heck knows? Look, they've made so many changes.
Yeah.
You know, it could work, it could not. You know, I think a lot of it depends how healthy is Barry coming off the Achilles. Does Chris Jones take the leap? There's a million ifs with that defense. But I'll say this again, and you said it earlier, too, none of it matters in today's NFL if Mahomes is really good and they're scoring 30 points a game. Because I'll say this about that defense, it's not giving up 30 points a game.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, as much as – and I was at the head of the train about Bob Sutton getting moved on to another job. Mm-hmm. But look, I'll say this about Sutton. They don't typically, in his tenure, they don't give up a lot of points. They give up a ton of yardage. But they'll typically – stop teams, cause a field goal. And with this offense, the one thing that will benefit the Chiefs' defense, if this offense lives up to expectations, teams are going to be very one-dimensional because they're going to have to score.
Yes.
It's not going to be a situation where you're playing field position and you're okay with punting because you think you can stop Smith. If the Chiefs are as good offensively as they clearly believe they're going to be, teams are going to have to score, and they're going to have to score touchdowns. And it's much easier to defend that than when you're scoring 20 points and you're trying to play a chess match worrying about what the team's going to do, and they have a million options at their disposal.
I don't know if the intention of this conversation was to slow down the hype train. I think at least that last answer just pushed it a little bit faster, because that is that's the dream.
But see, that's the dream being the key word. Like, I think, look, early on, people are going to have to expect Mahomes to have a couple of games where he just throws the ball away and it probably costs him.
Absolutely.
You know, a pick six, a dumb pick in the red zone. I mean, he's going to do those things. Look, even that Denver game, everybody remembers how great he was, and he was.
Mm-hmm.
But he almost threw a mind-numbingly dumb pick on the last possession of the game where he threw the ball in a double coverage 50 yards down the field, and it got dropped.
Yeah.
And so nobody remembers it because it doesn't matter, and he ended up executing, and they won the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think people just have to understand, look, early on, there's going to be one or two games where he just makes some dumb play, he doesn't read it right, he throws the ball into the defender's hands. The hope has to be, or as you said, the dream, that as the year goes on, there are more and more games where you say, wow, you know, they didn't play that well, but they won because of him.
Mm-hmm.
He just made two or three unbelievable throws. And so if that happens, and it happens with more frequency as the year goes along, they're going to be fine, and the hype is justified.
That's Matt Verderam from Fansided. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Verderam. Read his stuff on fansided.com. And hop aboard the hype train with both of us. It was funny. Talking to Matt, we ended up, I think, maybe pushing the hype train a couple miles an hour faster, even though the intention was to discuss, hey, is this something that we should be worrying about? No, the answer is no. We don't worry about overhyping. Enjoy the regular season emotions as we sit here in early May. What better time to be overwhelmed with excitement? So thanks again to Matt Verderam for joining us. I'm Joshua Briscoe here. You're listening to Chief Concerns on Sports Radio 810.
Chief Concerns.
Pew, 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 pew.
Welcome back to you just heard the name. Chief Concerns. It's in Curtis's big voice and then the lasers. We're here with you for a few more minutes tonight, and what better way to end tonight's conversations than by honing in on an inherently meaningless activity that we all eat up. No, I'm not talking about rookie minicamps. I'm talking about ESPN's power rankings. Oh, power rankings. They mean nothing. What changes in the offseason that moves teams around? We have no idea. But oh, they're so good. They're the only thing that gets us through a long offseason. And ESPN.com put out their first post-draft power rankings. The Chiefs are at number 10. That's a top 10 start for 2018 Chiefs. Now, you may ask, why do they raise four spots from 14 to 10 after the draft? They added mostly role players and depth pieces. And I would tell you that I'm not entirely sure. But I think that what this does at this point in the offseason is it gives us a look, a step back from where we are. I think national perspectives are interesting whenever you are afraid you might be too close. We're using a microscope on like a full-on painting at this point. A magnifying glass would be just fine. You might see better with the naked eye or a few feet away. The thing that I realized over the course of this week is that I think the biggest hole on this team is the second cornerback spot. We talked about this a little bit with Matt Verderam last segment and earlier today. I think the biggest flaw on this team is the second cornerback spot, and I've got questions about, like, Armani Watts and Eric Murray, Daniel Sorensen.
What about Steven Nelson? None of that really matters. It might matter whenever it really comes down to splitting hairs. But that's not going to be the thing that separates the Chiefs from being the 10th best team in football, or the 5th, or the 10th, or the 15th, or the 20th. It's going to be about what the quarterback can do and what this offense can do. And so we're in on a microscope. I have a microscope on that cornerback depth. And wherever they end up, the teams that the Chiefs are clustered around, you know, the three teams better and the three teams just worse than them. Well, maybe the number 11 Carolina Panthers, the number 9 Packers can exploit Steven Nelson and David Amerson. And they probably will. But that's not going to be the thing that puts you at 10 instead of 17 where the Texans are. And the real variance, I think, comes whenever you give yourself permission to have just a little bit of exaggeration. What if the Chiefs had literal, actual, living, breathing Aaron Rodgers on this team? I mean, they're 1, 2, or 3. Eagles, Patriots, Steelers, Saints, Vikings. So the Chiefs are in that group with actual, literal Aaron Rodgers. And with Chad Henne at quarterback, they're probably what, 20? Or on the just below the Lions and Raiders and Washington and Houston? Yeah, that's about right. What about with Patrick Mahomes? That's the fun of it. We don't really know. And for the first time in an extremely long time, the Chiefs could be the 20th best team in football or the 2nd best team in football. And I don't think either thing can really stun you if you're paying attention to exactly what this team is right now and what Pat Mahomes can be. That's what makes this power ranking exercise fun and interesting, even as it is, in fact, intrinsically useless. I will not lie to you and say it's not intrinsically useless. It is, but it gives us a fun exercise here. And I can't shake the optimism. Overhyping Mahomes, maybe. I can't shake the optimism. I can't help it. I'm too excited. Thanks to Matt Verderam of FanSided. Thank you, Jed, for stepping in and running this ship perfectly. I'm Josh Briscoe. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye, Mom.